Digital Media Insider, Episode 19, October 4, 2007. Welcome to Digital Media Insider from O'Reilly.com. On our website, we explore the future of audio, video, and photography to help you get more creative with technology. I'm David Bettino, and I edit the audio section of the site. Today's show is a special guest episode featuring podcaster Michael W. Dean. Michael directed the film DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. He's also written a number of books, including $30 Film School, $30 Music School, and DIY Now, Digital Audio. Last week, Michael went behind the scenes at the Podcast and New Media Expo to compile this report.
Hi, I'm Michael W. Dean.
And I'm Michael's wife, Deborah Jean Dean.
And together, we do a podcast called Clone the Homeless. We decided to spend our first anniversary this past weekend at the third annual Podcast and New Media Expo in Ontario, California.
We went last year for one day, the day after we got married. This year, since we've become so obsessed with podcasting, we went for 3 days and four nights.
I somehow found myself speaking on a panel called Veterans of the Yahoo Podcasting Board with Stephen Ely, Evo Terra, and Matthew Wayne Selznick.
These guys are three of the main podcasting OGs. That's original geeks, according to Evo. This was a working vacation, or a working anniversary, if you will.
I grabbed my trusty Zoom H2 portable digital recorder.
The one that looks like an ice cream bar.
And interviewed these OGs and a fair percentage of the rest of the primary movers and shakers in podcasting.
Let's check into the airport Marriott and get started.
What is your name, sir?
I'm Steve Ely. I do a podcast called Escape Pod. We narrate science fiction short stories and give them out every week.
Do you know how many subscribers you have or how many downloads you get of each episode?
We get about 18,000 downloads per episode. Yeah, we're having fun. I mean, it's taken us 2 years to get to that point, and yeah, we're still growing slowly. There's still a huge perception out there that podcasting is a geeky technical thing, just to be able to tune in and to listen to them. And it's not technically true. I mean, if I can get my in-laws to subscribe by iTunes and just plug in their iPod and it just magically works every week, yeah, just knowing that it's there is actually the biggest challenge. There need to be more solutions to make that work. I would like to see that market open up a little bit and have a little bit more innovation than what we've already seen in making podcasts easy to use. We've gotten a good start on that trend. We haven't quite gotten there yet. I know that TiVo has a really good video option, specifically for – they have channels of video podcasts that they've specifically selected, Rocket Boom and Ask a Ninja and things like that, that they made very, very easy because it's actually just, you know, pushing it right there at the consumers. What I'm trying to do with Escape Pod in particular is – try to help revive what I consider to be a very flagging genre. Short science fiction has been in trouble for decades now. The magazines are all declining in circulation. Fewer and fewer people are taking the time to read short stories in particular. Novels are doing okay, and even anthologies are often doing fine, but magazines, they're not. People aren't taking the time to read these days because there are so many competitions for a person's time. Yeah, there's video games, there's computers, there's everything. When you're actually sitting at home, time when people would traditionally read, they're doing 20 other things instead. And the concentrated attention it takes to make it through a short story, that's getting rarer and rarer. However, everybody has times when their eyes and their hands may be engaged, but their minds aren't necessarily and their ears aren't. You're mowing the lawn, you're driving. Everybody has a commute these days, and those are getting longer and longer. So my feeling is I wanted to help short science fiction by giving people the opportunity to discover stories that they would never have taken the time to read otherwise, that they would never have known was there because they're not going to just spontaneously buy that magazine at the bookstore, take it home and read it, but they might listen to it on their Monday morning drive, which then leads to people spending money in the genre. And we were the first paying content market in podcasting. We narrate short stories, and currently we're paying $100 per short story for non-exclusive audio rights from the authors. This is the only way I could get quality content, because professional science fiction authors are not going to give their stories away for free. They're not going to just give me permission because I ask. They're out to make a business off of their writing. But if I offer them $100 for a story that they might have already sold to a magazine, that's free money to them. And also I'm giving them an opportunity to find a new audience for their name to get out to people who haven't tried them before, who don't necessarily subscribe to those magazines. And I knew that I had to pay for content. I knew that at least early on, there was no way I was going to get that through advertising. I'm still working on the advertising angle. But I asked my listeners. I said, if you want this to continue, if you want us to be able to continue buying and giving you quality stories each week, then please, if you can, help us out. You know, we have a PayPal link on our site. Click it if you can. If not, at the very least, tell a friend. And what I found is if you don't put a price tag on your content, people are actually extraordinarily generous. Our average donation is about $20. We've had many, many $100-plus donations. People decide what the value is to them. If they can pay, they do pay. If they don't, I don't give them a hard time. Everybody gets the same content. But people, I think, feel good about sponsoring things that they can buy into that they can then feel a part of. So I think donations are actually a very underrated model if you can make the pitch to the audience of how it's going to bring them value. If you don't just say, give us money so we can buy beer, the audience doesn't really see how that's going to reward them. Unless you're doing a beer cast, I suppose. But you know, if you say, this will help us give you content every week and here's exactly how, then you know, I think people actually will open up quite a bit.
My name is Evo Terra, and I am the co-founder of PodioBooks.com, current project I'm involved with. I also was the co-author of Podcasting for Dummies, also soon to be released Expert Podcasting Practices for Dummies, and I've been in the podcasting space since about October of 2004, so at it for quite a while.
When did it start?
Which it would that be?
When did podcasting start?
The term was officially in use in July of 2004 by about three people. And come around October, there was about 40 people that were actually creating and doing their own podcast. And so we've been at it since that time.
So you're an OG.
Original geek for the podcasting might be more appropriate.
What's the future of podcasting? And I invite you to blow my mind.
It's kind of a complex question, and I think it deserves an equally complex answer. Right now, we are all very much involved in the nuts and bolts of podcasting. How to make it work, how to make your website dialed in perfectly, how to get your RSS feed tweaked, how to make your MP3 file sound perfect, or video podcast, or whatever it is. But it's very much tied to the concept of RSS distribution. I think what we're seeing a shift now, or we should start to see this shift, is less emphasis on the podcasting part and more emphasis where it belongs back on the content, on the media itself. That's the entertainment value, is that which you are listening to or watching, not necessarily the fact that you got it because you subscribe to a feed and it comes down once a week. That's not exciting to anybody. I think you're going to see a lot more people stop focusing on the technologies and more focusing on what it means to become a digital content producer. And that means a lot more than just having an MP3 file that's downloadable via an RSS file. That means you start thinking about things like CD distribution. That means you start thinking about things like alternate means of distribution, getting it on possibly network, you know, possibly some other methods of distributing the content around. That's when it gets fun.
But doesn't that just turn it back into radio and TV?
It turns it into radio and TV if we still deal with the same distribution platform they have, you know, a broadcast signal that goes down at a particular time. But the reality is there's only so many channels we can have on a television, even though mine goes to 900 or some odd, and I only watch four. And there's only so many radio stations you can get on a dial. Still, I think the internet as the primary method of distribution maintains. But that doesn't mean I have to consume it on the internet. My primary method of consumption might be a television show. You know, I want to watch TV, and I want to consume my video podcast that way. My primary method of consumption might be my car stereo, and it's easy for me to distribute things in the CD mode, right? So we're not talking really about anything new right here. We're talking about using and taking your digital content and making it available on any consumption platform that's possible, not being quite as much of a slave to the RSS world. Me personally, am I trying to make money with podcasting? Yeah, with PodioBooks.com, I think we've got something interesting enough there, novel enough, and also large enough now because we're pushing out about 25,000 episodes of podcast novels every single day. You know, we've got a large enough audience, and I do think we can make some money off of that. Eventually, we're in a little different space than everybody else where it's a podcast and you show up and you talk and you have fun with it. You know, we're kind of representing 150 different authors who are releasing their books in this particular method. And so it's tougher for us to go to an advertiser and say, that which you know as podcasting, which we've spent the last 3 years teaching you about, that doesn't really apply to what we're doing. We're just taking audiobooks and pushing it out in that form. So we're about to revamp the way PodioBooks.com works totally and make it, as I said earlier, less about the RSS feed and the podcast and more about the media itself. You know, what are all those books? Sometimes they're audio files. Sometimes they're physical copies of books. Sometimes it's a CD we'll mail to you. You know, a variety of things. And yeah, I think we'll eventually make that a going concern. At least I hope. One of the things that concerns me, how about I do that? I put a concern at the end of this thing, is this rush towards monetization. A lot of podcasters, especially those that are getting into the space now, the newcomers, if you will, and there's always going to be newcomers, right? Seems to me like they're doing a little bit of underpants gnoming. You familiar with the concept of underpants gnoming? Yeah, a lot of people don't have to explain it. Yeah. And it's this, I'm going to make this great content, and then suddenly money's going to flow to me, and I will be happy, right? Well, I don't know if that ever will happen if the audience is willing to throw down hard cash immediately. I think you can make money from your podcast, but I think it's hard to make money off of a podcast. There's this big rush to monetization when, kind of as you pointed out almost a little bit earlier, Michael, we don't want this to turn into radio and television. We want this to be a much larger landscape of more interesting concepts, and sometimes it's okay to do it for the fun. Sometimes you can find five or six other people that are doing it for the fun, that are doing the similar thing to you, and you can get together and find some ways to make money. But I want to make sure that the fun stays in it. And I'm hearing a lot about big companies getting involved, and I'm just concerned that people are going to take a look, maybe from the listener point of view, who's never discovered podcasting before, and say, the same crap I get on radio and TV. Why would I want to do anything different? Part of me would like all podcasters to get better, but then again, part of me kind of likes the ones that suck too. I mean, that's just the true citizen media at work. Some will rise above it. Some will find new ways and novel ways to do things, but I think it's a big enough playing field to where everybody can involve and play in this little sandbox we've got here called podcasting.
Okay. Hi, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Tim Berkman. I'm the founder and CEO of TNC New Media, which is the company that produces the podcast and New Media Expo.
How long have you been doing it?
This is our third annual show. We did the first one in 2005 in November. And then, so we've done three now, and our fourth annual next year will be in Las Vegas.
Did the name change a little along the way?
It's changed every single time.
What has it been?
So it's been Portable Media Expo and Podcasting Conference, Podcast and Portable Media Expo, and this year it's Podcast and New Media Expo. So
what's it going to be next year?
Probably the same. I think it'll be the same. It might just be New Media Expo, but we haven't decided that quite yet.
Is the name changing because what's defined by it is evolving, or
over the past 3 years, that's why it's meant different things. In the beginning, nobody knew what podcasting was, and so when we called it Podcast Expo, people said, "Well, I don't want to go to an Apple show."
Yeah.
So we changed it then. The next year, Portable Media Expo was fine; it worked for that. But between now and then, it was people talking about doing stuff for portable devices, and now people do it for, doesn't matter what it is, whether it's the web or portable device or whatever. And podcasting and New Media Expo is kind of redundant, so that's part of the issue of why we think it might change again, but I'm not sure.
Actually, I heard your greeters at the thing you're having right now, someone kids hanging out and said, what is this? And they said, it's a podcast expo. And the guy said, a what? And yeah. She said, oh, you know, those things for your iPod.
Yeah, they do a lot of different trade shows, so we try to keep them up to date, but you never know. So I'll have to apologize in advance for
that.
That's
funny, though. I'm not digging on them. I'm just saying, like, it's such an ubiquitous answer of, oh, it's for iPod. It's like, it's kind of been branded that in a way.
You know, most people on the street ask them what a podcast is, they still have never heard of it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people have iPods do because it's in iTunes, but that issue is still there. I've always said we don't need to attach the success of the medium to people knowing what the word is, because I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Where do you see this headed in 1 to 5 years?
I see this headed where everybody's going to be creating content that just is not just for a portable device, but competes with traditional TV and radio. So if you create a video podcast, instead of having 300 channels of digital cable, you'll have 3,000 channels, and individuals will have to be able to have their own channel and broadcast out via TiVo or whatever devices wins in this, so that you don't have to know how to even download anything. You'll just pull it up like you do a channel on TV. If podcasts are that easy to get, then we'll really see it take off and see it mainstream and see a lot of people consuming a lot of different content. And I know there are companies working on that. You've already seen flashcards in car stereos. And as soon as your car stereo has Wi-Fi in it, and then when you pull into the driveway, it syncs up with your iTunes or whatever else, then we'll really see it getting easier and a lot more people using it. People were surprised to hear, I think, that people are hearing about podcasting for the first time, even at this show. So, I mean, there are people learning about the word podcasting now, and there will be tomorrow and thousands the day after. So we've all been in it for a long time now. It seems like 3 years, but for a lot of people, this is brand new. And so to us, it seems like old hat. For a lot of people, they, you know, still just learning about it now.
My name is Tim Street. I'm the creator and executive producer of French Made TV.
How many downloads do you get from each episode?
We've done 6 episodes. We've had about 23 million downloads. Our most recent episode, How to Share Photos, has had about 3 million downloads just on YouTube.
Are you making a living at it?
I'm not making a full-time living at it. I'm kind of waiting for the marketplace to grow up. Right now, if you're a content creator, it's hard to find advertisers. There's no real marketplace built to put the content creator and the advertiser together. So there's a group of us that have formed the Association of Downloadable Media. We're going to have our first meeting here at the Podcast and New Media Expo here in Ontario, California. And what our goal is to work out some industry standards so that advertisers and content creators, independent content creators, can have a language together.
How did you get the idea for French Made TV?
I was snowboarding in South America during the summer. I went down this one trail. I hit a rock and fell down a crevasse about 100, 200 feet. When I came to, there were these 3 French maids nursing me back to health. When I really woke up, I thought, you know what, this is a good idea for an online video series. It's been the most fun that I've ever had. I've worked in television for a long time. Since 1988, I've been working in television. And this is by far the most creative, fulfilling thing that I've ever done. I can do whatever I want to do. As a digital artist, this is the first time that I can afford the canvas to go paint my own pictures. And I don't have to get a studio's approval. I don't have to get a network's approval. I can just go do it. And to me, it's a very, very exciting time. I think it'll be something that consumers don't realize they're doing. Just like they go online and they search Google, they don't think about it. They just do it. It'll be seamless. They won't realize that they're subscribing to an RSS feed.
So, after a day of running around interviewing the OGs in hallways and lobbies, we invited Podcasting for Dummies co-author and Patiobooks.com co-founder T. Morris to our hotel room and recorded him having an informal summit with Matthew Wayne Selznick, longtime podcaster and author of sci-fi patio book hit Brave Men Run. We asked them one question, and they talked for an hour. Here's a couple minutes of the highlights.
If I remember correctly, Brave Men 1 was already available in print when you came to us, right?
Actually, it was already available in 3 formats. It was the first of these kinds of things to be released simultaneously in podcast, print, and ebook formats on the same day. So I was distributing it through my own website, bravemenrun.com, and through another little network, Radio Memories Network.
Okay.
You know, as many different streams as possible, trying that approach. And then heard about Patio Books right before one of these expos. Actually, I guess that was the first expo. So yes, it was already available in paperback and in podcast as well. But I was looking for another distribution stream and saw that Mark Jeffrey was already there and you were already there. And I thought, oh, okay, give this a shot.
Did it make a difference in the way you were able to get the word out about Brave Men Run?
Yeah. What it came down to was because it was so, number one, free. It was so free.
It was so free.
And it was so easy to use and a good interface and had the comments built in and everything that eventually I stopped doing my own feed. I separated from Radio Memories and Patio Books became the only distribution source. It made it easy because it was, you know, you could
one
tell
place
people,
to find it.
One place, one set of tracking, you know, so that helped a lot.
And that's the thing I think that makes Patio Books so unique. It's bringing a new voice and it's bringing a new sense of awareness for authors that you may or may not so easily find. The other thing I think that from a technical aspect about patiobooks.com, which I think is great, and of course we got to give mad props to Chris Miller for coming up with this. This was the first service that I was aware of that actually designed an RSS feed that was individual for every person.
Right.
I mean, why someone has not snatched up Chris's idea and ran with it is beyond me. Chris may just sit back and go, Creative Commons, no big deal. You know, just go ahead and do what you like. One of those type of developers. Right. But what a great concept.
Yeah, the idea of feeding it from a database rather than from the actual files.
The other thing that we do at Patio Books, which just really flips people out, is we're giving our books away in audio format for free. And people just think we're on crack. Other authors come up to us and they say, well, can I do just 5 chapters and then give them a website to go to? And we're like, no. You do the whole thing, period. And I have found that it actually stimulates my print sales.
Absolutely.
And also it stimulates sales where you wouldn't expect it to. Like, I don't have international distribution, but Moravi has sold, and also Billy has sold in the UK, in Australia, and the Netherlands, and Germany.
How else would independent authors like yourself, like me, get a worldwide audience?
Right.
You know, very few small presses can do that kind of distribution. Through Podiobooks.com, they get this taste, and then they can find another way to get the actual print version if they need it. Yeah, I mean, I've got listeners to Brave Man Run on every continent except, for some reason, no China.
Usually when people buy a book, an author will see maybe 6% of that sale. Whereas at Podiobooks.com, they're seeing 75%. Matt is wearing a t-shirt that says DRM. It just doesn't work. Digital rights management.
It's
which
a method
is,
of controlling access or controlling use for non-tangible media.
Now, I understand all the principles behind DRM, and I understand why it's there, and I think sometimes DRM does have a place. I think other places it doesn't, in particular the Zune, where it's going to slap onto your podcast a DRM, which kind of goes against the whole thing about Creative Commons.
Yeah.
Yes, the joys of the airport Marriott. Not only airplanes, but trains.
And there goes a train, I mean a plane.
Later, we went to a podcasting party in the presidential suite. Here's a snip of that.
That's a great picture of the light. That's
believable. My husband, I'm giving him a hard time.
Oh, you still admit I'm your husband, huh?
Whatever is inside. We woke up the next afternoon and went to the panel where Michael was speaking.
When I started podcasting, I was using $30 worth of equipment, and now I'm using about $4,000 worth of equipment. And I think my podcast sounds about twice as good, not 20 times as good.
I remember your first few messages. You were aggressively proud of your $30 equipment.
I was aggressively proud of everything. I walk in, you know, everything I've done in life, I've like walked into the room, broken a chair over someone's head, and then apologized later, and that's how I introduced myself to podcasting.
Pretty much.
I mean, I was at this event last year, and I was like, I'll be speaking at this thing next year. You'll know who I am. I did. I said that to my wife, and then I apologized later, and now I'm here. Yeah, I was using like a $30 lavalier mic plugged directly into my computer, and it sounded like it, and I was bragging about, like, I'm spending less money than the rest of you, and Ely, you know, I think his first...
Yeah.
I think you're... Well, yeah, we can tell. Yeah. And now I, like, fall asleep reading gear catalogs and buy microphones when I should be buying clothes. I like gear, I like stuff, I like learning how to use it too and figuring out how to use it, and I don't study it from an engineering standpoint. It's kind of like I plug it in and make the mistakes and then figure out what's wrong and intuitively figure out and try to make it better and listen to other people too. I mean, all these guys really kind of kicked my butt and then nurtured me along to get better at what I do and gave me a lot of advice while kind of saying, get away from me, kid, you bother me, because I was bothering them. You know, it doesn't cost a ton of money to do a good podcast. You can use, you know, a $50 or $100 mic. You can use Audacity, which is a free editing program.
Speaking of microphones, after the panel, we went to the convention booth floor where we chatted with a representative from Marshall, the guitar amp company, who also make the budget-friendly MXL USB mics that are very popular with podcasters.
Okay, my name is Roy Harper. I work for MXL Microphones. We're getting more involved in the USB side of our microphone products. Traditionally, we've been involved in manufacturing studio mics. With the podcast communities coming up the way that they are these days, a market appeared there for USB devices, and we decided that it was a good time for us to get involved in that. We have three USB microphones in our current range, a small diaphragm one, a large diaphragm one, and a stereo. And we also have a new device called the MicMate, which will convert basically any microphone, whether it's a dynamic or a condenser, into a USB device. It'll supply phantom power. It's bus powered. It uses all Delta Sigma analog to digital converters, and the sound quality is outstanding. Future trends, we intend developing more and more USB products. We're looking at new interfaces, and we're looking at some OEM products for other people as well.
What about the higher-end mics that you have coming out?
We have one high-end mic which has already just hit the market. It's called the V88. That's currently selling throughout our dealer chains. It's only available through our independent dealers, so we haven't put it into Guitar Center and places like that. We decided, in order to keep a level playing field, it was time to give the independents a fair share of the market. The microphone itself, for all intents and purposes, behaves very much like a Neumann TLM-103. I think it sounds a little bit better, a little less fractious at the top end. Very nice, sweet-sounding mic, very warm. Podcasters love it because it imparts a very nice, warm character to someone's voice. Another microphone that is due for release towards the end of this year is going to be called either the V79 or the Genesis. We haven't decided on the name yet. It's a new tube mic. Not a lot I can tell you about it apart from the fact that it sounds absolutely wonderful. The sonics of the microphone and the electronics have been completed, and what we're working on now is ensuring that we have a complete package that when someone opens it up, they can see that they're getting a quality piece of merchandise.
We met Father Roderick, a priest who does a podcast called The Healthy Catholic. Michael asked the Padre to bless our H2 recorder. Father Roderick was happy to oblige.
I will not only bless the tool itself, but also the person that is using it, because that's of course where the blessing has to go.
Thank you.
So, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, we ask you to bless this recording device, to also bless Michael, who will be using it for his recordings. We ask you to help us to spread everything that is good, everything that is beneficial to the well-being of all us here on this earth. Help us to become your instruments, to spread only blessings around us, and to help the people around us, because that's what you ask us to do. We ask you to bless us, to bless this recorder, to bless Michael, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you, Father.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Make me feel good.
Thank you.
Yay.
That night, we went to an exclusive sip and quip for the expo speakers. Here's 30 seconds of the convivial cocktailing. We ran into more A-list podcasters at the Sip and Quip.
O'Reilly.
This is for the O'Reilly Digital Media site. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Mignon Fogarty. I'm Grammar Girl, and I do a 5-minute weekly podcast about grammar and writing tips.
How did you start doing that?
Well, I was a freelance writer, and I was editing documents one day. I realized I was coming across the same grammar errors over and over again. It just hit me that that would be a really good idea for a podcast, something that would be short, but that people could also use and that would be interesting to them.
How many listeners do you have?
Each episode gets about 100,000 downloads. We just passed the 7 million download mark total.
Do you make a living at it?
I do. It's my full-time job. I'm a full-time podcaster, and I'm also the founder of the Quick and Dirty Tips Podcast Network. So we have 5 other shows right now, and we hope to have 20 by the end of the year.
How do you make your living at it?
Well, we have advertising in the shows, and then also I have a book out, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips to Clean Up Your Writing. It's an audiobook right now, and it's doing really well. And I'm working on a print book that'll be out in probably spring of 2008.
On what publisher?
Henry Holt & Company. They're also backing my podcasting network.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where do you see this headed in 1 to 5 years, podcasting in general?
Podcasting is definitely going to grow. I read statistics somewhere that about 12% of the people in the United States are listening to podcasts right now. And I think there's so much room for growth as people discover that so many amazing topics are available that they can listen to for free on their own time. I mean, podcasting to me is so exciting. I think as more people learn about it, they'll have to gravitate in and listen. And then as far as trends in the industry, I think that more and more people probably will end up doing video. I think that there's a natural progression in the industry toward doing video, and we're thinking about doing it ourselves.
What barriers do you think there are to a large percentage of the population consuming podcasts?
I think just learning about it. You know, I gave some interviews on the radio a couple of weeks ago, and I had all of 5 seconds to explain what podcasting was to the general public. And it's so hard to explain in such a short amount of time. There's so many different ways to get a podcast. It's hard to get that point across to people in such a short amount of time. In my experience, when people discover podcasting, they get so excited they tell their friends.
I think a lot of people don't know that you can listen to them without owning an iPod, too. I think that's a barrier, too.
I think that's true. You know, there are definitely people out there who have other kinds of MP3 players, and maybe they don't know that they can get podcasts, and that would be a good thing to fix.
Can you tell us a little bit about what hardware and software you use?
Oh, sure. I have a laptop PC, and I use Audacity, free sound editing software. I have a Sennheiser microphone, a black metal pop filter, an Alesis mixer, the 4-channel Alesis mixer. That's about it. Not a lot of equipment. You know, podcasting doesn't take a lot to get into it. That's one of the things that's nice about it.
We ran into Steve Ely again. Steve's always willing to yak, so we yakked with him more.
I'm not sure that there's a lot of listener demand for listening to podcasts through their phones right now at cell phone quality delivery at that very limited bandwidth. And in particular, very few phones have the hardware options, or few consumers are putting in the hardware options so that you can actually just wire your phone into your car stereo or into a headset or actually listen easily that way. You know, listening to a 40-minute podcast by holding a phone up to your ear, it doesn't sound appealing to me. But if it works for people, that's great. I'm not saying it shouldn't be an option. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I don't think it's necessarily where the future is. I think the future is going to be in more high-quality portable content delivery. Some people are podcasting to make real successes out of themselves and to try and make a living off of it, or to try to get a message out because they have political, you know, motivations or social motivations or ways they want to change the world. Some people want to do it just for fun. Some people want to do it as an outlet or to stay caught up with their friends. That's already the reasons why everybody podcasts, but I think you're going to see a lot more of it. I want it to get easier to produce. I want it to get easier to consume. It needs to be as easy as YouTube is. YouTube is a great example of something that was really made easy. Apparently, it wasn't hard to make it easy, just someone had to sit down and do it. Now, everybody knows what YouTube is, and everybody's passing around those links to each other. You know, once you can just pass around a podcast link and get that excited about it, then I think we're going to start to have some fun.
We also yakked with Michael Butler, who played in bands who used to play with Michael Dean back in San Francisco in the 80s. Michael Butler now works for OG Pod Network, podshow.com.
My name is Michael Butler. I do a show called The Rock and Roll Geek Show. Well, what it is today, it looks like it's everybody trying to make money with their podcast. I think it's heading with a lot of disappointed podcasters to begin with who got into it to make money, which is the wrong reason to get into it, in my opinion. Where it's heading, it's still young, it's still exciting, I guess. Some people are going to make some money at it. I've been making money for 3 years at it, so a lot of people are going to stop doing it, obviously. How long have you been doing your podcast?
A little over a year, but we're maintaining our amateur status so we can compete in the Olympics. We're not trying to make money at it.
There you go, yeah. The special podcasting Olympics.
Yeah. The special Olympics of podcasting.
Right. So I have no clue where podcasting is heading. Maybe there won't be so many experts by this time next year. It seems like everybody who's a podcaster is now an expert on podcasting. Yeah, look at all the books on podcasting.
Most of them are podcasting for profit, media promotion and marketing. Where's the one that just says, have fun making your podcast?
Here's how to podcast for profit. Write a book about podcasting for profit. That's the only way to really be profitable, I think.
Or have a salary. You make a salary, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies are actually starting to embrace podcasting as a way to advertise their product. I'm into the niche stuff where they just talk about nerdy stuff like the zoo.
For the closing arguments, here's a really smart and plucky unknown newcomer named Joel Mark Witt, webmaster for the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore.
You're like the ultimate DIY guy. Would you say that?
I'm one of them. So who are you and where do you work and what vodcast do you do?
My name is Joel Mark Witt. I work as a communications manager at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore. I produce a show called Maryland Zoo TV. The original idea was going to be just setting up a camera and just shooting, you know, talking about the animals. But one of the interns that I'd got for the show had brought some ideas to the table, and we kind of went out and actually produced some quality show content. But I didn't want to let the executives at the zoo know what we were doing because my day job is really managing the website. We just started and got 10 shows under our belt, and we got picked up by Comcast in Baltimore. It's on regular TV. It's on-demand platform, so it's like video. You know, you can order the video up, so you don't have to tune it at a certain point of time. And then we're also distributed on the web, you know, marylandzoo.tv, so you can check it out there. Or one of the things that we did is we just started the show. You know, a lot of people inside organizations may be fearful of, like, just starting to do something. But our philosophy was kind of like, you know, I thought, it's better to just ask forgiveness later than ask permission, you know, ahead of time. Because I think that if you ask somebody, they're going to say no to you. But if you just go ahead and do it, you can just get things done. And then they'll like it later if you're quality and do a good job.
For links to everyone in this podcast, plus detailed notes about the recording process, visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com. Michael Dean will be back next week with a photo gallery from the podcast and New Media Expo. You can hear more of his work at stinkfight.com. You've been listening to Digital Media Insider, the official podcast of the O'Reilly Digital Media site. Visit us at digitalmedia.oreilly.com. That's O-R-E-I-L-L-Y. And let us know what creative technologies you'd like to explore. Incidentally, I wrote this music using software that I learned about while editing articles for the site. See the show notes for links. For O'Reilly Digital Media, I'm David Bettino.
I will not only bless the tool itself, but also the person that is using it, because that's of course where the blessing has to go. Thank you.